We the voices behind the faith of the Hawaiian nation, the Hawaiian race, rise for justice. The day has come for all our people to stand as one. E ala e, e ala e. We the voices behind the face, the Hawaiian nation, Hawaiian race, rise for justice. The day has come for all our people to stand as one. E ala e. We the warriors born to live on what the land did she can give. Defend our birthright to be free. Give our children liberty.
Aloha and good morning. Good morning. So we're running a little bit late this morning, but we are here. And I'm not throwing anyone under the bus, but I could. This is the one cackling in the background, uh-huh. This is Pilikia Opono. And this is Maka'ala, and we're here with myself and Mauna Kea Trask. Are you there, Mauna?
Aloha, Auntie. I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can, and I can also hear you rustling around. You're getting ready for your day as well. You've been having some busy days. This week is kind of stacked for you, I think so.
So yes.
Yes.
Hey, before I start, I tried to get a word in at the end of last month's show, but I wasn't able to. I just wanted to acknowledge and give aloha to my wife, Erin. Love you very much. I should have forced my way into the end of the radio show on Valentine's Day, but, you know, Auntie was talking, so I couldn't. I love you, baby.
Hey, love you, Erin. You know, that could be like a T-shirt. That could be like a standard thing. Yeah, Auntie was talking, so I couldn't. Yeah,
I know. I caught heat after. I was like, I tried. I promise, I tried.
Have you met her? So, thank you. We are here, and we apologize for being late. Not Mauna's fault, and not Makala's fault. So, guess who's left? So, this is Pilikia Opono, and Mauna and I talk a little bit before each show about what we might cover, and generally, it gets themed on things that are coming up for all of us in today's world, and we try to circle it back to what would have been done in kingdom time and what would have been the cultural context for it. And then we try to make a story about how could that be handled today if it was handled in a Pono way, or is it really trouble? Things that we see that look like trouble, that feel like trouble, are they really trouble? Is it really a problem? Is it really pilikia? Or is it the natural course of things? Or is there a Pono way to address it? And the thing we thought we'd talk about today, since we get no calls, is to address a little bit of sea level rise. We've touched on this before, but sea level rise in the sense of what changes will man likely have to make to survive sea level rise, to thrive in sea level rise, and what kinds of impacts will those have? Might have that been handled? Ooh, that's a bad sentence. How might have that been handled? Did it twice in the old days. So we're going to talk a little bit about sea level rise today, in the sense of what are the adjustments, what are the strategies that Hawaiians could make, did make, might make, for impacts that are existential like that. I mean, it's not like you can run away from it, right? It's in front of your nose. So we thought we'd start with the concept of fish ponds. What would a Hawaiian do in times previous about their fish pond integrity in sea level rise? How would they address it? And I know that Mana's going to take it on a little bit different track than that, but that's how I started. And I'm just going to let Mana talk, because I think we expanded it out a little bit more than that. But that's where I started. Yeah, Mana?
Yeah, correct.
Oh, goody. Okay, so what would they do and what can they do?
I think, so when you say like, so you have a fish pond, right?
Yeah.
And there's all different kinds, and neither you nor I are fish pond experts, and there, if a fish pond expert listens into this, right, I think we're saying this in all due respect of what we know, but so there's different types, right? But in any event, they all tend to be on the coast, whether in, you know, brackish water or more up the river or on the beach or even on the reef, right? So I think they would protect them, and they would maintain them. They would build them up. I don't think that there's anything to show that Hawaiians wouldn't. And I still think they should, because fish ponds are not just like your own, the Konohiki's refrigerator or, you know, whatever. They actually have a multiplier effect, and they increase the fishery along the entire coast, because you're protecting the baby fish, and, you know, you're providing more habitat to increase the productivity of the land. And that's what Hawaiians did. That their whole thing was purposeful. Their whole outlook was purposeful. And these islands are very bare in calories, excluding endangered birds. And, there's not plant food. We had to bring all that stuff over. So that's what they would do. I think they would repair and restore and develop and maintain them. And if you look at the southern coast of Molokai, I mean, prolific fish ponds, right? And this is dotted, the whole thing. It's really cool. If you go on Google Maps, you can see, you get out in the reef, where the old ones used to be, or the underlying portions of the walls that are broken, you can't see on the surface anymore. So that's what I think.
Yeah. So then the question is that what we should be doing today to places that are threatened along the coast? And would that be pono? Would that be correct development, or would that be not good for the environment? To protect your food source is one thing. To protect your moneyed value asset is quite another in my world. It's a notion of what's for the common good, right? So the fish pond fed multiple people, a broader community, not just one Konohiki, as you said, but also not just one landowner. So is that comparable to someone building a seawall today? Is that comparable?
Yeah, and definitely. It's a very nuanced conversation. And I think that's what's good about this show, is it allows for nuance to enter into the discussion, right? Because when you're at a public hearing or, a political thing or some kind of council meeting or whatever, you lose that. You need, and social media, definitely, you don't have nuance on that platform. So And I think it's really a matter of perspective. So much depends, because even now, if you have the, a lot of the anti-development sentiment is personal. It's transactional, it's relationship-based. There is no objective measure by which everyone can perform according to a certain set of rules, and you won't get pushback, or you will. You know, I know people who have done X and totally got away with it, and let's say, and moneyed individuals, and other people who have done X, and they aren't allowed to do it. So it can be very arbitrary and capricious, right? But I think that
that's how it feels. That's how it feels to the people, to the other people sitting in the hearing room, in the back row. That's how it feels. It feels arbitrary. It feels like, oh, I get it. They can do this because that's who they are. And I'm looking for some sort of larger check and balance. I'm looking for something that has more to do with the community good or the community value, the importance of to a larger number of people rather than just one individual property owner. And that's not often addressed in the law. In some issues of zoning and development, it can be, you know, what is the purpose of this development? Does it meet a societal purpose, that kind of thing, a societal need? But not often, right? It's usually pretty cut and dry. You get this piece of property, you're the owner, you can or you can't.
Well, and that's the thing, okay, so, it's going to get really deep quickly. Let's go. We're in the waters of Kane right now. Or no, Kanaloa, the deep purple waters of the big squid. So when we come from, when you're looking at private property, so coastal development is really interesting because there's two types, right? There's private and then there's public.
We
a
think.
An absolute significant majority, and I'm talking like, let's say 80-90% of the coastal development and seawalls and all that stuff is public, right?
In
all Hawaii, because we have belt roads. That's what Hawaiians had, you know, the roads that we did have were belt roads, and largely for the Makahiki procession annually, because it's just so much quicker to go in a canoe. Like, why would you traverse rivers and valleys when you can just sail? Like, anyone, if you go down on the Pali Coast in a canoe or a kayak versus you hike that thing, the former is way better. It's the way to go. Hawaiians didn't hike in and out of Kalawao. Those are cattle trails, right? So that's it. I mean, the people who lived out there, yeah, they it was like they sticked in their zone. But anyway, so
that,
if you look at like
the... That, by the way, is an opinion and a statement that Mauna Kea has made several times that does draw response in the public. In the store, at the post office, people go, what? We walked everywhere, da-da-da-da-da. And Mauna goes, you know what? Why would you walk when you can sail? Why would you? Well, you know,
you can disagree with me all you want, that's fine, but just go read Kamakau, read David Malo, you know, read these guys and see what they have to say. And there's no need to walk everywhere. I think once we had horses and we dominated horses and we got super good at horseback riding, yeah, we traversed the bland more. But bro, try walk from Hilo to Kona. Kamehameha was sailing.
That's not happening.
I mean?
Well, Hilo to Kona is an extreme example. Okay, Mauna.
Wait.
Our esteemed engineer has just said, oops, we need to play the disclaimer. You know that thing that we were late playing last time?
Yeah,
too?
Yeah.
It doesn't occur to her until I open my mouth. I say something and she goes, oh, shoot, I forgot. And I'm sure our listeners are going, hang on, where's that little message that says, whatever comes out of Makala's mouth, KKCR is not responsible for. Well, it just happened again. So let her play that real quick to cover her assets, and we will and we'll continue after that. Go, Laura.
Speaker, and do not necessarily the views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Thank you. Okay, so you know I'm the only morning person in this group. Actually, I'm not. Mauna gets up way before I do, but we know who's not. Okay, Mauna, sorry. Did you hold that thought? I hope you held it. Okay, go.
Yeah, back to the topic. So I think that... So public infrastructure, we got to protect. And if you look at the sea level rise study, the baseline study, I think it was 2012 at this point, that we all use as the state's, you know, kind of like the baseline objective measure of shoreline erosion and accretion. It always says, for example, that Kauai, 70% of beaches are eroding on Kauai, which is not actually true. It's 70% of individual transects, which is measurements on the beach, are eroding, but in actuality, they're shifting. So, for example, you take Anahola. When you measure Anahola, if you look from a bird's eye view, and you go from east on the park side, the Hawaiian home side, and you move north towards Aliamano, if you just draw dashes going Mauka Makai along the coastline, those would be transects. And they measure the accretion or erosion of the sand according to how they go up and down in that little transect ruler, right? So on Anahola, Aliamanu is eroding on that side, and we all know about it, and it's been going on for a long time. However, near the river mouth, it's accreting. So what it shows is the sand is moving. And if you look at like Google Maps or GIS maps, Google Earth, you can see the sand churns in the bay, right? So what then does this mean in those areas? Well, it's a couple things. One, the sand is out there. Okay, so the sand isn't going away as in disappearing. It's just the movement of it is changing over time, and it always has. And with global warming, everyone here accepts it, so we're not going to have that argument. But humans have accelerated and affected its process. Ultimately, geologically, Kauai is going to sink just like Midway did, right? I mean, you know. You've been to those atolls. That's mm-hmm. our inevitable history.
Ain't no mountains there.
That's right. But in the meantime, of course, there's people here. And so when you look at it, The only beach that's disappeared is a small little pocket beach west of Palama Pond, like off of, I think it's in Robinson Land. I'm not sure, but it's like in that area by Port Allen. Probably not Robinson then, but in any event. But they don't measure like Na Wili Wili, even though you have the breakwall or harbor, you know, like the huge public infrastructure projects, they weren't counted as disappearing beaches. And if they did, that would be what's disappearing the beaches, right? Because if you look at the most erosive side of this island is the east side, and the most erosive part of it is right by like Ponokai, Mauka, I think it's Lihi Canal, I forget.
Right.
But it right over there. So that little corner along the break wall for the outlet.
The ramp.
The boating place, yeah, the ramp. And then the county bike path, that's where it's eroding the most. And yeah, then so on the west side, it's east of Kikioa Harbor is the most accreting portion, and west of it's the most erosive. So it's public infrastructure that's really affecting this place. But obviously, it's really, really sexy to hate rich people who live beach houses. So Lanikai gets whacked for it, right? You got the guys in Hyena get whacked for it. So proportionally speaking, it's public infrastructure. But everyone likes to hit the coastal landowners. And it is what it is. I mean,
well, one reason they like to hit the coastal landowners is because the coastal landowners are there. You know, in small kid time, from many of these communities, there was the coastal landowner wasn't there, and he wasn't manipulating the ground or the earth or the sand or the water at all. And so, just that it's part of our memory, or at least of our mythology, that didn't used to happen. You know, I'm firmly convinced that it used to, but you know, whatever. I think that it's just that's just part of the syndrome of blame the guy you can't confront, blame the guy that is too big to be blamed, that kind of stuff. But I think as far as a natural process goes of a community asset like a fish pond that was not somebody's front yard spa. You know, they weren't building these things to be a queen's bat. They were building these things to feed the people, to feed all the people, that they would preserve it at any cost. I'm looking at places like Heia in Kaneohe, and the massive size of that thing and the wall that is around it, and thinking, wow, you know, at some point they're going to have to elevate that. I'm looking at places like Alekoko. You know, are we going to have to elevate that? We've made an investment in it now, both people and money and future plans. And, you know, are we going to have to elevate those as sea level rises? Because it's going to rise, folks. There's just no there's no argument now.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And I would say they have a constitutional right to do it.
And maybe a constitutional kuleana. If in fact it feeds people, like I'm presuming Alekoko will, and I know Heia does, and several of the Molokai Lokoia, the fish ponds there, feed people to this day. They almost have the response, in my opinion, they almost have a responsibility to preserve that place, to support resiliency in the community, and to feed your people.
You bring up an excellent point.
Oh, goody!
And I if I may expound on that a little bit.
That's Mauna's polite way of saying, "Auntie, shut up for a second. I got something to say."
It's going to escape me shortly. Okay. But PDF always goes so slow. But I don't know if there's a constitutional obligation to do it. But I do think that there is an equally fundamental obligation. Hold on.
He has a reference that he just must use, because instead of, you know, just spewing like Auntie does. Auntie, by the way, has no computer in front of her. Her phone is off. She has no pen and paper. As a matter of fact, she's got nothing here. Just mouth.
So this is really interesting. Okay. So it's the usufruct of land. So all right. So usufruct is a legal term. It's an old one, but it means the right to enjoy the use and advantages of another's property, short of the destruction or waste of its substance. Okay?
We like that.
So, yeah. So it's... Now, we have the mahele that occurred in the kingdoms, and that was private property. And that was done, I think, to protect Hawaiian land and Hawaiian political power. Like anything, there's good and bad to it, and history bore out, and its history will continue to bear out. So we'll see what the ultimate value of it was, but it happened. So there's private property in Hawaii. But in doing that, the Board of Commissioners to Quiet Land Titles, who was two Hawaiians, two Malahinis, and one, I say three Hawaiians, but one half-blood, right? They said that in talking about what the Mahele meant, they said, look, what the king is giving up, because the king owned all the land. Kamehameha III at that time, at that moment, he owned all of Hawaii. The Mahele was his giving up of his control to create private property. And so they talked about and they discussed it. It's the principles adopted by the Board of Commissioners to Quiet Land Titles. And what they say is that discussing what the king is doing. And so in talking about it, they say, what is the nature and extent of that power which the king has bestowed upon this board? So the king gave this board the power to do the job. And they say it can be no other than his private or feudatory right as an individual participant in the ownership, not his sovereign prerogatives as head of the nation. So what they were saying was that the king in a monarchy, l'état c'est moi, right? Like the king is the government. So in when you take away a king's total monarchical power and create private property, you're abdicating some of that power. Right? And so what is that power? And they're saying his individual right, not the crown, not the crown that shifts to the next Kamehameha. It was only Kawakioli and what that meant. It's a weird discussion to have, and it can be deceptively simple or deceptively complex, but basically they're splitting the crown from the person who wears the crown with regard to control and power over land. And so in discussing that, they say, well, among these prerogatives, sovereign prerogatives, which affects the land are the following. One, to punish for high treason by forfeiture, if so the law decrees. Two, to levy taxes upon every tax-yielding basis and among other lands, if the law so decrees. So they're saying, like, when you hear the things, the sovereign citizen argument, we don't need to pay taxes. No, you do. You've always had to pay taxes since you got that kuleana. The question only is who you pay those taxes to and what those taxes were. So in the Hawaiian Kingdom, they had Pu'ulima, they had the workday. Initially, you could pay taxes in cotton and pigs, and now you pay money. And for a long time, you've had to pay money. But in any event, the king can always, or the government, the crown, can always charge you taxes. Three, and this is the one, to encourage and even to enforce the usufruct of lands for the common good. To provide thoroughfares and easements by means of roads, bridges, etc., for the common good, and to resume certain lands upon just compensation assessed if, for any cause, the public good or society safety requires it. So eminent domain. So the interesting thing is, I've never read anything or seen cases that discuss these five sovereign prerogatives that arguably, that I think all lands are subject to. In Hawaii. So this is different than the constitution that we have now that was last amended in 78, effectively promulgated in 59. You know what I mean? Like anything beyond 1887, anything even within the constitution, these are like, these could be interpreted as encumbrances on property. And so when you look at this thing, like you said, can you, when you look at land use, it's very much private property, but then subject to the police power to regulate it, and that's zoning. So if you have a lot, you can do whatever you want with it, as long as it's not a nuisance or it's within the right area, and that's where you get land use and zoning. But our land use and zoning code enforces the minimum level of regulation because you have a constitutional right to use your property how you want. And that's the law, and that's the push and pull of it. But when you look at common good, there's always an issue. And so I think that, and then it comes, what is the common good? And it's interesting because, and this is where we diverge on our opinions, is that if you look in the SMA, it is not an anti-development statute. It's a pono development statute. So if you comply with it, then that's, you should be able to do what it allows you to do, and that it's basically the law says this is good development.
And the pono part of it is, the compliance part of it is, how does what you want to do affect others? And are you subtracting from someone else's rights or values, property, whatever? That's yep. essentially it. By changing the place, by changing the land.
Yeah, but now we. Sorry.
No, no. Go ahead.
But and then we get into the point of who's this someone, and yeah. what. And what are there, and with like coastal, and what are there, what are you protecting of theirs? So, and the big thing is, okay, on coastal development, look at recreation. Now, if there's a big bad hotel that's coming in, the type of which we really haven't seen since the 70s, that is going to build up the coastline, wants to make a private beach, like all those fights have been fought. You can't have private beaches. Everyone knows it. No developer's trying to do it. No lawyer wants to, you know, it's just not going to happen. Forget it. This is the law. And this is why I do what I do, is to be on the other side of it and ensure those things happen. So everyone would agree.
If someone is proposing, say, for example, Ale Coco, where, you know, the community's invested, right? 3,000 people showed up to help. That's what I call community investment. You know, people from all walks of life, right, to build this wall. If the community is invested in that, even if they don't get a fish from it yet, you know, which they're not yet, and sea level rise threatens that structure, is it just, do they just have the right to just make it higher and higher without additional process, without additional discussion, without additional permits? I mean, because the stuff, the water that's going to bounce against it is going to cause more damage if the wall's higher. I mean, I'm just looking at this like, yeah, for the broader public good, it probably makes sense to be able to bulwark your structure and make safe so that it can produce food. But at what cost? I don't know.
Yeah, let me qualify this by saying, you know, I am on the board of Ale Coco, but what I'm saying does not represent a board statement or official statement in any way from that organization. So I'm just speaking as an individual, and I'm making that acknowledgement. Now, I would think that, and the way I look at things is not from an environmentalist perspective. I look at things as a Native Hawaiian, and what I can understand from that worldview by looking at the record, you know, and speaking with Kupuna, yeah, but while acknowledging simultaneously that we in the oral history part of our culture, it's not reliable. And that was clearly stated in the early 1800s, let's say mid-early 1800s. So what I understand is that I would say individually, those Hawaiians, irrespective of whatever a common good means, because it's a very loose term, they have that right. They don't have that right to do it without permits, because you could never do anything without permission from the Konohiki or the king. So that office has changed. It's now the DLNR. You know, if it's in conservation district, it's OCCL. It's the county to some extent with the SMA permits. But permitting is pretty good for fish ponds. You pretty much get to do what you want. I would say that under Article 12, Section 7 of the Constitution, they have a right, and the state shall protect the right to practice traditional customary practices of Native Hawaiians, and that is a clear established right. So I would think that they should be able to do a reasonable amount of permitting and be able to do it. Now, I am not anti-development in any way, shape, or form, because Hawaiians were not anti-development in any way, shape, or form. They used the materials they had, which is loose rock and wood, and so it's generally benign, not long-lasting development. But in the 19th century, when they had cement and they could blast coral block and they had all these modern materials, they absolutely developed the coastline. They dredged Honolulu Harbor. Look at old pictures of Lahaina. Seawalls. Look at old pictures of Kona, seawalls. Waikiki. I mean, they used to build all kinds of stuff and piers, right up to the sand, in the sand, over the sand. So that's what Hawaiians would do. So I'd say, personally, as a Hawaiian, we should still be able to do that. And that doesn't mean everything can be done, but I think fish ponds are a wonderful strategy to deal with climate change. Because if you look at Lydgate, that's keeping the sand there. You know, and those are effectively fish ponds. My whole life, there's fish in them. You can't spear them in there. And so, you know, I think that novelty, if you had, but you know, it needs to be a Hawaiian organization. You can't just start dropping rock and saying it's a fish pond. No, it's got to be legit. You got to work with, you know, Huikuapa or whoever it is, and it's got to be real. But if it's real, hey, we need fish. Our fisheries are depleting. We got to kill all the invasive fish. Like, there's a huge job we need to do in the nearshore waters. And I think instead of, you can look at these coastal landowners as, you know, cartoon villains, sure. But you can also look at them as Malihini resources that who are here now as part of a long line of Malihini resources that have come here before, good and bad. And some of these people do tremendous good and work with the community and work with higher educational institutions and do these things. And these people have more resources than the county and more resources than the state. And if there's a partnership out there with a community group or a Native Hawaiian group or whatever, and it's a pono development, absolutely they should. There's no reason from a Hawaiian perspective to prohibit them from doing coastal development. Now, if you just want to do it, a pilikia development, right, which is like you said, that pure selfish thing that's going to have an outsized bad effect, well, then no, don't do it. But with regard to, like, the beaches and stuff, going back to that topic, what you have is SMA protects and even encourages the development of recreational resources. Beaches are recreational resources. And so if you want to do beach nourishment on a beach that's disappearing, the SMA, actually the law, not only supports it, but arguably mandates it. And some people don't like that. They don't want beach nourishment in any way, shape, or form because it's not natural. Right? If nature is taking away the beach, well, then it's not natural to put the sand back. I would just counter in that nature is not taking away the beach. Climate change is. That's man-made. That's a man-made problem. It warrants a man-made solution. And now we are invested in the environment. Now we are taking responsibility for our status as an evolutionary force. So like humans, I think at this point, we're like the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs. You know what I mean? Like we have evolved into a force of nature.
Because we have that ability now. Because
we have that power.
Because our toys are bigger and our brains are faster and our computers work.
Oh yeah, and chemistry, I mean, it's wild. And so from a Hawaiian perspective, being that steward, the konohiki of the area, we now have the obligation to protect those resources and preserve them from our kids. Like I want my kids, I used to love to sand slide on like a bodyboard and you can't, all the beaches, I used to go to Sheraton all the time, but the slope is too steep now. It's changed. And now there's underlying all the beaches on the south side is sandstone because it was just compressed for thousands of millions of years. And bro, if you hit that on low tide, it's like concrete. You'll just scrape out. And it's not fun. Like you're on the soft sand white beach, and then you're just on like concrete.
And it's not smooth either.
You roll. Real quick. And so now these guys become, and also a lot of these coastal landowners, they're Makai of the Belt Roads. So if we don't let them protect their property in some pono way, their property will erode, and hooray, a lot of people will be glad that they're gone. But what does that mean now? Because we have to protect that road. Because the only way out of Hanalei is over that little bridge going into Lumai, right? You can't get to Waikokos without going over that little bridge, which is totally a seawall. So I think we need to put sand in front of that seawall and build a beach back up, because there used to be a beach there. We took that sand away. we got to put it back. Otherwise, that's never going to leave. We're not going to puka holes through the mountain to get to Haina, right? So it's like time to make some tough decisions, man. And if we allow the coastal landowners to protect their parcels, they're no longer evil rich homes. They're now buffer zones maintained by a private party that protect the roads. I think that that's what it is. We can look at it that way. And then if we change the way we look at it, what we look at changes, you know.
I can think of five people I hope are listening that are going to blow up my phone as soon as 8 o'clock hits. Yeah, there's that. Mauna just did a really slick job of going through his entire portfolio in about 7.5 minutes.
Let me say one more thing.
Wait, there's a this case. This is not I forgot.
Okay, real quick, because there's managed retreat as well. Okay, and this is really important. So Hawaiians would not only armor the shoreline. And I understand that's what's going to be interpreted. That's not what I'm saying, but that's what I said. But they also would go Mauka, and they also were Mauka, far beyond where we are now. So, for example, I'm looking at this right now. This is by Mike Carson, Integrating Fragments of a Settlement Pattern and Cultural Sequence in Waineha Valley, Kauai, Hawaiian Islands. This was published in 2003. And It's interesting thing about Waineha, and he has on page 87 of this publication, he has a map identifying the historic sites within Waineha, and it starts with the Waineha Beach site, which is like where those old land grants were that are eroded away now.
Yeah,
all the way up Mauka. So site 1501 is the most Mauka, and it's like way beyond powerhouse. It's like in the middle of the valley going up there, which goes up far. And this is where in the census, people wrote in Waineha that they were Mu. Like they weren't Hawaiians. They recognized themselves as Mu or Menehune.
Right.
And there's bananas which do not migrate. Only Kanaka plant bananas that go all the way up. Right. And the guys who do work in Koke'e and, you know, lay fence for predator control and all the hunters, they see these banana patches and it trips them out. There's walls up there. And so also too, what we're not allowing ourselves, but you can't move up there because it's conservation district. So Hawaiians would have moved up. They wouldn't have drawn these arbitrary land use districts that to restrict their livable zone. And that's a big issue with Haina, because a lot of Hawaiians are getting pushed out of Haina only because they can't make any more land there. They can't subdivide. They cannot create new parcels, which I think is an unduly restrictive program, especially for Native Hawaiians.
Well, that'll be a popular position. I think the concept of retreat is a critical one. We started by talking about the potential for armoring and whether that can be pono or not, but retreat, I do not see as a giving up. I see it as an adjustment. I see it as recognizing that the nature of the place is changing and you must adapt. I see it as an adaptation. I see it as resiliency. But many people see it as surrender, as giving up and losing. They see it in a negative context. If you're going to retreat, you're giving up all that was, you know, now in harm's way, right? And of course, societally, how are we going to address this retreat thing? We have some advantage. We have several advantages on Kauai, especially on the North Shore. Not that we, you know, have private ownership of any of that stuff, but the land's there.
Oh, it's choke land.
It's not that we don't have a place to go to. I say this about Hanalei all the time. You know, all those lands up Mauka of the valley, those are state lands. We could go there. That's our land. You know, how that's done is the question. But retreat is not the bugaboo that people think that it is, in my view.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And if you look, but there's no... Everyone talks about managed retreat, but no one has a definition for what that is.
Well, no one wants to do it. That's why.
Yeah.
You know, if we really wanted to do it, when the waves are lapping at our doorstep, we will figure out what management retreat looks like.
I don't even know if we will, because if you look at, and this is a worldwide problem, right? We're this is not unique to Hawaii in any way, shape, or form. But look at, like, pictures of, look at Venice in the summer.
Yeah.
There are people out in the, on the, in the cafes with, like, trash bags on their legs. And they're just sitting in the Mediterranean Sea. You know what I mean? I mean,
it's high letting tide. The water. It's like the, what is it? The frog in the pot of boiling water.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, you know, but for us here in Hawaii, there's a reason. There are reasons for us to want to stay on the coast. We need at least access. We need at least fish. We need at least the practices and the food from that geography. So we're always gonna have to have some sort of access. And if the roads go away and da da da, we still actually, you know, it's just gonna bring the fish closer to us. If you think
I don't know if that's true.
You know, okay, I'm moving Mauka. I'm going up in the state lands in Hanalei. Cool. You know, I brought my taro with me. And I don't have a highway to get to Safeway, but oh well, you know, but I brought my taro with me and the fish come to me. This is not a bad idea. I don't know how many thousands of years old I am at this point, but you know, it's a picture to paint. Oh, Mauna, how do we do this? 7 a.m, folks. I don't know whether to apologize or to say, you know, here it is again. Oh, those two. I do hear from people, and I know you hear from people that say, you know, well, that was interesting. You guys really went down a rat hole. But we would love to hear from you. We would love to hear from you. GM@kkcr.org. Will work as an email if you really don't want to tell Mauna or me what you think. That's okay too. But if you have ideas for of things for us to tie up in a knot, you know, let us know. We're pleased to do it. And you can see what happens clearly when you leave us alone. I mean, you can see the result of allowing us to just, you know. Yeah, think. It can be a bit twisted. So, oof, Mauna, I hope.
So please answer questions. We love feedback, and the whole point of this is to have a community discussion. It's often as one sided as it gets between Auntie and I. But if you guys let us know if you disagree, we also are lifelong learners. So if you have something to share, we're happy to be wrong. I'm happy to be wrong.
He's happy to be wrong. I'm seldom happy to be wrong. I just, you know, I'll accept it if I'm pummeled into it, but I'm not as happy to be wrong. But I'm older, you know. I've decided I'm right more often than not. So that comes with age. I think I'm supposed to get happier to be wrong and willing to accept being wrong, but that's not happening yet. So it's an evolutionary thing. I'll get there, I'm sure. Maybe not. We want to thank KKCR for making this possible. And KKCR's fundraiser is coming up, folks. It is Thursday, tomorrow? It is tomorrow. Okay, so KKCR's fundraiser begins tomorrow. Even if you don't appreciate the ramblings of Mauna Kea and Makaala and Pilikia or Pono, you have the opportunity to participate. You have the opportunity to say so. You have the opportunity to edit the content, to tell us what you'd like us to do. And you don't have that opportunity in other kinds of radio stations. That's not what they're about. It's not what they're for, but it is exactly what this radio station is about and what it is for. It is why it was formed. I remember the days, some of you do too, when the concept of this radio station was brought forward. My memory is a clipboard in Hanalei at a party. And I said, you want to do what? And they said, well, you know, we had this horrible storm and it was really hard for people to communicate. And we were getting our news from Oahu and it was wrong. And that was scary. And I was a victim of that too. And Mauna is dismantling his office. And I think, you know, this radio station serves a true purpose. You know, dog running on the road, cow out. We've had a lot of cow out lately. I don't know where they're all going, right? They just saunter down the road like they have a plan. I'm a cow, and I'm going over there. And I don't care if you're a car. So tomorrow, please join us. You don't have to wait for tomorrow. But tomorrow, join us and bump the numbers and
if you donate today, you get automatically entered into an early bird drawing, and the winner of that drawing will win a 2-night stay at the Grand Hyatt Resort and Spa. And you can donate by going to kkcr.org and hitting the donate button.
And it won't matter sea level rise at the Grand Hyatt, because you can sit in the spa, you can sit in the hot tub, and nobody cares what's happening outside. That's a perfect getaway. It's a perfect respite. We all need it, folks. You
Staycations are great.
Yes, they are great. You just pretend you're away. Thank you, Mauna. And I know you're going to have I know this week has been busy for you, and I appreciate you taking the time. And let's all pitch in and try to support this radio station that has the guts, the nerve, the naivete to allow this this kind of conversation to occur. Thank them by donating. Mahalo and aloha.
Mahalo.
Aloha.